Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The world knew Cassius Clay before he became Muhammad Ali. His early years are the subject of a play soon to open here. We'll talk about it a little bit later. But first, we go behind the headlines. Students are restless again at the University of Missouri campus. A couple of important local issues have been getting renewed attention this week. One is the ongoing campaign to keep the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency in St. Louis. The other is the debate over that draft consent decree between the Justice Department and the City of Ferguson. Joining me in studio, reporters Maria Altman and Jason Rosenbaum. On the phone is education reporter Dale Singer. Dale, do you hear me?
I'm here.
Very good. Good to have you. What's going on with this Mizzou story? I know you've been covering it all week. I get the feeling that there's kind of a downward spiral of some sort going on at Mizzou. Everything you hear about it these days is negative.
Well, they certainly wouldn't like to characterize it that way, but I can't argue with your impression. I mean, just in the last, 10 days to 2 weeks, we've had two curators, both of whom were from St. Louis and both of whom were the only two African-American members on the board. They both resigned, saying that their day jobs, as it were, really take up so much of their time that they didn't have the time to offer what they needed to the university. And there was a letter released from the former president, Tim Wolfe, who basically blasted everybody in sight and urged big donors to the university to get behind him in efforts to negotiate a severance package after he resigned last November because of the racial issues. And the racial issues keep on going. I've been monitoring the meeting of the Board of Curators that's been going on in Columbia the last couple of days. Yesterday, a group of about 24 students interrupted the meeting. These were the student leaders who led the racial protest last year. They basically reiterated their demands from last year and wanted more action. Today, the interim president of the university, Mike Middleton, who is African-American, said, he understands the frustration. He understands that everybody wants more progress. These problems haven't cropped up overnight. They're not going to be solved overnight. But there's clearly this frustration on the part of Middleton and members of the Board of Curators that at a time where they would really like to be able to concentrate on education, on funding education from the legislature, that a lot of other issues are commanding public attention.
Including the fact that they have credit issues, financial concerns, projections of lower enrollment, which is always not a good sign, and union issues with adjunct professors. Lots going on down there.
Yeah, and here on the St. Louis campus, the Chancellor, Tom George, has said that there's a big $15 million budget hole, and he's asking people who work at the campus, which of course includes members of the staff at St. Louis Public Radio, for ideas. And he made no bones about it that depending on what the ideas are, they are more likely than not to include layoffs later on this spring.
All of this has caught the attention of conservative legislators in Jefferson City. How is that likely to play out? They're indicating that they're not going to move on any action on reappointing or appointing curators to the board. How is that going to play out?
Well, that's interesting because curators have to be confirmed by the Missouri Senate. Right now, there are 3 out of 9 vacancies on the board. And the president pro tem of the Senate, Ron Richard, who is also head of the Gubernatorial Appointments Committee, has said he does not want to take up any more appointments this session. Now, once the legislature adjourns in mid-May, the governor could appoint curators who could serve until the legislature comes back next January. And, of course, next January there will be a new governor. So I think the Republican leaders of the Senate, and they've got a big majority in both houses there, probably think, well, you know, we might as well just wait and see who the next governor is, and maybe we'll get curators more to our liking. I mean, there does have to be a party split on the Board of Curators. There can't be any more than 5 members from one political party. But in the meantime, of course, the curators have a lot of important work to do later on this year, including choosing a new president. And I guess there have been some questions as to whether or not if there are temporary curators, people who are named after May but don't don't really get confirmed by the Senate, and they're the ones who take part in naming a president, whether there will be some question about the legitimacy of the whole process. So there, it's a very interesting time.
Let me bring Jason Rosenbaum into the conversation. Jason, you've done some reporting today in conjunction with the political aspect of this Mizzou story.
Yes, I had. We had Senator David Pierce of Warrensburg on our podcast yesterday. He is both the chairman of the Senate Education Committee and a member of the Appropriations Committee. And he says that legislators are just up in arms about a whole bunch of things at Mizzou, whether it be kind of their bad relationship with former UM Assistant President Tim Wolf, the University of Missouri-Columbia's connection to Planned Parenthood that was very controversial, or just how the protests last year were handled. And whether that angst translates into a significant budget cut, Senator Pierce didn't think that it would necessarily, but there could be individual line items that could raise the ire of the legislature that could be cut. But the bottom line is the university system is not held in high esteem right now by the legislature. Even people who I think are generally supporters of the University of Missouri system have just been frustrated with its direction. And it remains to be seen whether that is going to translate into losing a bunch of money.
Dale, before we let you go, what's your take on this email that the former President Wolf put out? A lot of people were quite struck by the language he used, the whole tone of it. What's your take on that?
He certainly didn't pull any punches and burned a lot of bridges and whatever other cliches I can come up with. he quit. So a lot of people, I think, are rightly asking, well, gee, if you quit, how can you expect to go back and negotiate a severance package? It's not like he was fired. It's not like he was told he could not stay till the end of his contract. He magnanimously said at the time, I'm leaving for the good of the university. My presence here has been a distraction. It'll be better if I'm gone. But then he turns around and kind of trashes everybody in sight. The head of the Board of Curators, Pam Henriksen of Jefferson City, said at a news conference after their meeting in Columbia that there are no negotiations going on at this time, and I wouldn't be surprised if that remains. It's kind of a curious thing to quit and then say, pay me for leaving.
Jason, that used to be your turf once upon a time. What's your take on that?
I think the thing that caught my attention the most was one of the reasons that he resigned, specifically because he was worried about a quote-unquote Ferguson-like protest at the University of Missouri-Columbia. And he also mentioned a prominent Ferguson activist was coming, who I think was DeRay McKesson, if I'm not mistaken. And I think what struck me about that is when I was at the University of Missouri-Columbia as a student in 2004, there was a pretty prominent protest over a racially ignorant column that was in the newspaper that was very inflammatory and that made a lot of African-American students justifiably upset. And what I remember is that the chancellor at the time, Brady Deaton, met with those students on the steps of Jesse Hall. I think the administration listened to the students' concerns, which I think were very valid in this instance. And I think that if there was leadership at the University of Missouri system that had maybe talked with these students right when it was happening about what their problems were, I don't know if it would have had a different outcome, but it certainly may have made it less inflammatory than it was, essentially.
And Dale, the concern over diversity issues has not gone away. As you pointed out, there was a protest yesterday in which that was the principal concern during the curators' meeting.
Right. And then again, you've got the what they call the optics. You've got six white lawyers sitting on the board of curators, and they keep saying that diversity is our main concern. Diversity is our main concern. Well, there was a student panel that addressed the board of curators earlier today, and they basically said, you really don't know us. You really don't have the background and the experience that you need to address issues of diversity. Come spend some time on the campus. Come talk to students. And the curators kind of said, that really has never been our role. And the students said, times are changing. Maybe your role should be changing too. It's interesting that the interim president, Mike Middleton, both in his comments to the board and in a news conference afterwards, took great exception to phrases that he said have been heard used, like the inmates are running the asylum and the animals are in charge of the zoo. And he kept saying, this is not a zoo. This is not an asylum. These are students. this is why they're here. We really have to, you know, dial down the rhetoric and look how we can solve all these problems.
And the protesters yesterday were also there in support of Melissa Click, the professor who got into some difficulty during the demonstrations there last fall when she called for muscle during the coverage of one of the demonstrations there.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise that some people said, well, gee, why are the students backing Melissa Click? I just think they were backing Melissa Click because she was backing them, and they were thinking that maybe the Board of Curators acted too quickly in suspending her from her job after a misdemeanor charge was filed against her, and then later the prosecutor in Columbia kind of dialed back on that. So, yeah, it's kind of hard to tell who is the ally with who with other groups without the kind of paying close attention, and there are a lot of surprising alliances here.
All right, Dale Singer, I want to thank you so much for being with us and bringing us up to speed and what's going on there now and what has been going on there. We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. Thanks, Dale Singer. What do you guys think of that Melissa Click story? Maria, I'd like to get you into this. I mean, that was an interesting little sidebar.
Well,
to it
was
all.
A very peculiar situation. You would think a communications professor would be all for journalism students having the opportunity to report on a situation. As a reporter and thinking about having been a student journalist myself, it was very odd.
Jason, same thing.
It's hard for me to defend somebody who physically forces somebody off a public space, so I'm not going to be the person that does that. It is interesting to me that there's a lot of focus on her, and maybe justifiably so because she pled guilty to a crime. But I think people want to talk more about that potentially than the racial issues on campus, which is the reason why she was out there in the first place. And there's no magical solution here. These have been issues that have been on campus for decades. So it's going to take a long time, and it's a hard thing to talk about.
I think that put her much in the spotlight was the fact that there was a picture taken of her, and that picture was fairly indicting of her. I thought.
I would say so. I think that's putting it mildly.
Yeah. Let's take a break and come back and talk about some of the other things that have been in the news this week. Jason Rosenbaum and Rhea Altman with me in studio. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to Maria Altman and Jason Rosenbaum. Maria, Dale made it clear that politics has, and Jason have made it clear that politics has now become part of the Mizzou story, not too surprising. But you've been covering the NGA story, and politics now is certainly very much involved in that. There seems to be a new intensity to keep that
Absolutely.
In St. Louis.
Yeah, we're just about a little less than 2 months from the initial decision by the NGA, and things are really seem to be ratcheting up in terms of what I think of as almost lobbying efforts going on. This week, we had Congressman William Lacey Clay. He invited one of his colleagues, Congressman Adam Schiff from California, who's the ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee, to take a tour of the site in the city. It was the only site of the four that the NGA is considering that he had the opportunity to take a tour of. And so I did ask Congressman Schiff how much influence Congress would have on that decision, because it really is up to the NGA. And he said, well, you know, NGA Director Robert Cardillo will, you know, he'll make the decision, but, you know.
It will be up to him how much our input is a factor. But I have a lot of confidence in the director. I think he's a very good man. And I think he'll evaluate all the criteria and make a sound decision. So we'll have some influence, but ultimately it'll be his call.
I suppose it could be considered a good sign that the St. Louis City site was the only one visited.
It was, as Congressman Schiff said, it was the only one he was invited to view. Hmm. And he really was making the point that in an urban area, being a part of the Promise Zone, that it really was, if all things were equal, it should go to the city.
Well, we're always talking about the city site and the site over by Scott Air Force Base. There was a time when they were talking about the old Chrysler plant site in Fenton. What's happened with that?
Well, you know, those two sites, there was one in Fenton, one in Melville, and County Executive Steve Stanger threw his support to the city, and so they're really almost off the radar completely.
What sort of a timetable are we looking at?
March 25th will be the initial decision. It will be included in the Army Corps of Engineers' final environmental impact statement, and that's when the NGA will give its sort of initial preferred location. I've been told that it's fairly unusual for that to change, you know, from the final decision.
An interesting story, I guess it was this last week also, with legislative leaders getting involved in the picture and telling Mayor Slay, I guess it was, get this thing done.
Right.
It has to stay in the city of St. Louis.
Right. And the legislature has been supportive of this for you know, a while now. They've already passed legislation that would allow half of the withholding taxes from NGA employees to go into that site and to help pay for, you know, moving folks off the site and to pay for remediation. And Senate Pro Tem President Ron Richards said, hey, we'll do whatever we need to do to get this done.
Jason, I can't recall ever having heard a legislative leader talk like that to a mayor, basically saying, get it done.
I can't remember that either, but I'm sure that the Illinois legislature's counterparts are saying the same thing to the St. Clair County executive or the governor. I don't know if they're saying that to the governor. But my point for bringing that up is I think that there's equal intensity on the Illinois side. Every time we have an Illinois person on, politically speaking, like John Shimkus or Rodney Davis, they're just as gung-ho about it going to Scott Air Force Base.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we could litigate the pros and cons of each till the cows come home. But my point for bringing that up is it's almost like a boxing match between Missouri and Illinois at this point.
And they're going to give them the land in Illinois if that site is chosen. Is there a price tag on the land here, or is it going to be given?
That's hard to say. You know, St. Louis officials have said it's going to cost at least $130 million to buy people out and to move businesses and to remediate the land. Whether that price tag would then be passed along to the federal government, it's hard to know.
Hard to say. Jason, I'm going to turn to you for your coverage of the draft consent decree involving the Justice Department in the city of Ferguson. This is not a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination, is it, approval of the consent decree?
Oh, I don't think so at all. When I went to the Tuesday meeting, I would say the crowd, I don't want to say it was half and half, but it was pretty split between people that wanted to sign the consent decree and some who thought that Ferguson should essentially fight the federal government on this. And what I think it comes down to when we're talking about the opposition is just cost. The total cost per year has not been officially tabulated yet, but the city manager of Ferguson said a preliminary estimate could be around $1.5 million a year. Now, that could change. I think there's going to be an official price tag tomorrow at the public hearing at 10 a.m. at the Ferguson Community Center. But I think that that has to be a big concern for the people who are making this decision, which is the Ferguson City Council. There already are major budget problems in Ferguson. There's already a big deficit. There's already initiatives on the ballot about raising taxes. And this would kind of be put on top of that, so to speak. But conversely, there are people who say that doing this consent decree is the right thing to do. It could make the police operate a lot better. It could serve as a model for the rest of St. Louis County. It's a real tough decision that the council members are making. It's probably one of the biggest decisions in the town's history.
But couldn't it also lead to the dissolution of the city of Ferguson?
Well, that's an interesting question because I've been following disincorporation policy for a few years. And that was actually said at the meeting that if you sign this, it will be like the death knell and the road to disincorporation. But there is actually nothing in state law that allows a charter city like Ferguson to disincorporate. So you can make an argument that Ferguson cannot legally dissolve at this point unless the law has changed or they somehow vote to become a fourth-class city or village. But as much as an expert I am in disincorporation law, I'm not really sure how that would work.
Well, you're talking about $1.5 million.
Potentially.
Potentially. That's a lot of money in most people's mind. Is it enough to cause the collapse of the budget?
It could be. I don't know. Yeah. I think that it would certainly require Ferguson to make some tough budgetary decisions going forward about what they're going to do with their city government. And I think that another thing that was brought up, I brought this up, I think, last week, is Ferguson is the only city that's under this DOJ situation. You know, other cities with more high, I would say arguably more pronounced problems with policing, not only in North County but everywhere in St. Louis County, are not under the same pressure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's one side of the argument that says if Ferguson signs this, it'll be kind of a wake-up call to the other police departments. Others say it's not. There's going to be no pressure unless the federal government does the same thing. And you got to wonder what difference would that make in people's lives if only one city out of a bunch are changed. And I think that's a big question that has not been answered by the federal government, to be honest.
Something else that has come out during the week is the filling the vacancy following the death of Councilman Brian Fletcher.
Yeah.
That has been slowed down somewhat, hasn't it?
A little bit. I think that the council has to decide by next week. There's a part of the charter that says that if the council doesn't decide within 30 days, then the mayor gets to decide on the vacancy replacement. I asked about this. The next meeting on February 9th would fall into that 30-day window. But right now, the council is divided between Laverne Mitchum and Rob Chabot. I think that's how you pronounce his name. If I pronounced it wrong, I apologize to him. And the conflict there is that the Ferguson City Attorney said that you need 4 votes because that would constitute a majority in a 6-vote mm-hmm. council, similar to how you need 82 votes in the Missouri House or, you know, 15 votes in the Board of Aldermen, regardless of what the composition is. Others say it should be a simple majority, and that has to pretty much be resolved by Tuesday.
We'll let it go at that. Maria, anything to add before we say goodbye?
I don't think so. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, everybody.
TGIF, as we say. Thanks, Maria Altman and Jason Rosenbaum.